You know, 10 months ago, we made a decision to redefine our direction. We knew there would be ups and downs this season. We knew that we would encounter some things that were going to be difficult, and we did. With that said, I think we're in a better place today than we were at this time last year. And I think we have an opportunity to grow as an organization starting today.
Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, a show for the most passionate fan base in the NBA.
Levine, he goes right. Oh!
Stop it, Sampson! Did you not get the memo?
Hosts Jordan Malley and Matt Peck dive into the best Bulls news and stories around the NBA.
Here's Enes Kanter, what are you doing? The finisher in New York City.
Your number one source for Chicago Bulls news and stories.
We're going to preach patience. Doesn't mean we're not going to be looking for ways to get better, but a lot of it's going to come internally. We need Zach LaVine to be a better basketball player. Chris Dunn to come back a better player. Lauri Markkanen, Bobby Portis, you go down the line. They have to put in the time, and confident that they will.
So kick back, relax, and get ready for the best hour of your day.
Like I said at the beginning, I feel better today about our direction and our position than I did a year ago.
Locked On Bulls. Bulls starts now. Here are your hosts, Jordan Malley and Matt Peck.
What's up and welcome into Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. We're live on Dash Radio, DashRadio.com, and the Dash Radio app on the Nothing But Net channel. Live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central Time. I'm your host, Jordan Malley, writer of Bulls basketball in the NBA at LockedOnBulls.com and College Hoops over at SB Nation. Along with me is Matt Peck, host of Bulls Outsiders on NBC Sports Chicago and host of the 312 show on AM 1590 WCGO. Follow us on social media on Twitter at Jordan C. Malley, at Bulls underscore Peck, and at Locked On Bulls. Like us on Facebook, facebook.com/LockedOnShibles. Subscribe to the show, iTunes, Android, Stitcher, Google Play, Spotify, and anywhere you find podcasts, you will find us. Our text and voicemail lines at 331-979-1369. Drop us your texts, your voicemails. We're going to go through as many as we can on today's episode. Once again, 331-979-1369, the place to hit us up. Matt, welcome back. We got Bulls in Nets tonight. Should be a pretty interesting matchup. Spencer Dinwiddie, I think, is going to look to put on a show at the United Center tonight. But outside of that, the Nets are coming off of a back-to-back. So I think, with a little bit of help from the shooting, I think this Bulls team can hang around with this Nets team today.
Well, yeah, we'll see. I'm half expecting Dinwiddie to go off for like 40. You know, he's coming off a fresh contract extension. What was it, like 3 years, $34 million with the Brooklyn Nets. Good for him. Of course, a lot of Bulls fans always quick to name Dinwiddie as one of this front office's missteps, a guy that they let go, you know. Would we have been able to see that he would be flourishing this well the way he is with the Brooklyn Nets, and would he be this effective had he stuck around? We'll never know, but I think it is fair to say that he certainly looked like an NBA-caliber player while he was here in Chicago, and fans were sad to see him leave. And the Nets pulled off a pretty big win over LeBron and the Lakers last night, so they might be tired coming off the back-to-back, as you said, but they also might be fueled by what was a very big win.
That's true. It is very true. I'm excited to see these guys come home and get an opportunity to play fully together. This Bulls team now, with Dunn reinserted and the way that things went down in Oklahoma City, see how the Bulls will bounce back from that. Today's episode, we're just going to dive into all the text messages, voicemails that we've gotten from you guys over the past week or so. So we're going to run through all of those today. So let's start right off the top, Matt. This one's from the 703. It says, of all of the trades for Jabari Parker out there right now, the one I like most is Otto Porter. I know he isn't worth the contract. However, the basis of this trade is the presumption that the Bulls will completely strike out in free agency this year. We get someone who can shoot the three, play a little bit of defense, giving the Bulls three competent defenders in the starting five. This allows the Bulls to have additional scoring in the second unit with Holiday getting those minutes. Who is coming that realistic is going to be any better than Otto Porter? And are we going to get anybody in free agency? Let me know. So, Matt, Otto Porter, I know this has been an idea that's been tossed around by Bulls fans, and we kind of mentioned it yesterday, but just to kind of reiterate the fact, do you find it a good idea to punt on free agency in 2019? I think you and I have pretty much given up on free agency in 2019. Would you punt and take a shot at Otto Porter or just completely stay away from that contract?
I mean, it is a gross contract. If I were in the Bulls' shoes, though, I would realize that you're not getting anybody to come here in the summer of 2019. You're just not. as I said, I believe yesterday, this team is still way too far away from realistic contention and looks like a giant mess right now in the public eye and the national scope. So nobody's coming to sign here. So it's not like you need that flexibility that they always obsess about and talk about and remind us about how great they are with their flexibility. Because guess what? In 2019 summer, flexibility ain't going to matter. Ain't going to matter jack. So it's not like you'd be losing out on anything by taking on Porter's contract. And if it can net you an additional asset by moving Parker, or even moving Parker and also saying, hey, Wizards, by the way, you want to take Felicio with Jabari? We'll take your bad out of Porter contract. You take our slightly less bad Felicio contract. And the fact that Porter could pretty much, as our texter said, be a useful player for this Bulls team right now as a 3-and-D guy, especially assuming that the Bulls do move on from Justin Holiday, whether that's a pre-deadline trade or just letting him walk next summer. That being said, yes, I would be on board for this because I think you're making the best of a bad situation. And you could see, you know, yeah, Porter's making a lot of money, but he might actually be a useful player, and who are you going to spend the money on anyway? From what I'm hearing, the Bulls have no interest in taking on a contract like Otto Porter Jr.'s. Not even something in a slightly smaller scale. I've heard that they don't want to take on any money beyond this season. They don't want to take on a bad contract that is on the books next year in a deal for Jabari Parker. That's what I'm hearing. So unless that changes, Bulls fans talking about the Porter situation are killing themselves over something that won't happen.
You had mentioned it too, you just did, about the Bulls not wanting to take on long-term money. Then if that's the case and they don't want to buy Parker out, whatever that would be, I mean, if you're just going to let him sit on and rot on the bench for the rest of the season, a buyout makes sense, right? Even because you're going to have to pay him that $20 million anyway. So finding a middle ground to maybe get him to go to another team, I could see it. But I mean, if teams know that the Bulls don't want to take on long-term money, then teams aren't going to give literally anything to the Bulls for Jabari Parker because they'll know, hey, we can get him after the buyout. We can go after him and chase him if we really want him then, and we don't have to give anything up. So that's why I keep leaning more towards the idea that Parker's going to get this buyout more so than a trade is going to go down. And like we said on yesterday's back end of the episode, I'm not buying that 15 teams were involved. I'm not buying that 5 teams are interested in Parker. And a lot of those teams might have just picked up the phone and said, what do you guys want for Parker? Oh, you guys want more than slightly zero? All right, see ya. Hang up. Outside of that, like, teams will just go after him after a buyout. And I think there's a lot of other talent that teams can add that are competitive that are better than Parker, frankly. So I still see this ending as a buyout.
Yeah. Yeah, I think so too. I think that's more likely, and I think that the interest across the league is being a little overblown right now. All right, let's move on to another text message. This one comes to us from across the pond. Hey guys, love the show, avid listener from London. On ownership, is there no one else in the Reinsdorf family that cares about these Bulls? If Michael is so focused on the White Sox, surely someone else can step up and take control and actually run the team. How can this franchise mean so little to the family other than just as a cash cow? Is there no one else that could step up from the family? Thanks for checking in. Jordan, just a clarification here, because I know as a White Sox fan, you have very real feelings about Jerry Reinsdorf and how he splits his attention. Michael Reinsdorf is not really focusing on the White Sox. His father, Jerry, the chairman and owner of both the White Sox and the Bulls, is the one whose focuses and eyes are really on the White Sox right now, especially with these rumors about trying to get either Bryce Harper or Manny Machado. Michael Reinsdorf, Jerry's son, is the president of the Bulls and running the Bulls, and Michael Reinsdorf is very much so focused on the Bulls. But he is still, like his father, a owner or president who operates very much in a hands-off kind of way and puts all of his trust into his guys, being John Paxson and Gar Forman.
Yeah, it's interesting. Somebody brought up the idea to me on Twitter about how, you know, at least, like if you look at the Dallas Cowboys, for as many mistakes as Jerry Jones has made, at least he cares to a fault. And that's the same thing here, except The difference is Jerry Jones gets himself involved with too many of the minor details and is super loyal to his guys and gets his hands involved with the actual team going on. That's the complete opposite, is the Bulls management has so much faith in the front office that they just basically allow them to do whatever they want, and they're completely hands-off. And that's a little bit different with Jerry and the White Sox. Like, Jerry cares so much about the White Sox. And, like, Michael, like you had mentioned, I don't think really pays much attention to what's going on there. He's more focused on the Bulls than anything else. But the funny thing is if I have to be real about this situation, the next person in line is Michael's son, who is, what, 12, 13, 14 years old? Like, wasn't he the one that convinced Jerry, his grandfather, to bring the All-Star game here in 2020 because he said that's what millennials want to see, that's what young people like, and that's what they want? So if we're talking about anybody that is going to truly care about this team in the next decade or so, it's probably Michael's teenage son, right? Like, outside of Michael, who I don't really think really cares about the talent on the floor right now. If you're looking for a diehard Bulls fan that grew up, I think we got a point to Michael's son, who is still only like 12, 13 years old.
Right. Yeah. I mean, to me, that's where it starts and stops. And I know a lot of Bulls fans talk about, you know, and it's a little bit morbid, but, you know, like, what happens to the Bulls when Jerry dies? Because it's, you know, dude's getting up there in age. And then maybe when Jerry dies, his son Michael would decide that that would be the right time to just sell the team and move on and do something else. But I don't think that'll necessarily happen. I really don't. I think that Michael Reinsdorf still very much loves this basketball team and wants to keep this team in the Reinsdorf family. And he wants them to be a successful team and a winning organization. The problem is, and it's the problem that fans keep, you know, beating themselves over the head with a bunch of bricks is that he still thinks, just like his dad, that these people running the team are the right people to do so, and that he, just like his dad, is a very hands-off owner. That's the problem. It's not that Michael doesn't care and that when Jerry dies, Michael is going to sell the team immediately. I don't see that happening.
I agree with you. I think if anything, if we're looking at both franchises that they own, I think if Jerry were to pass away, the White Sox would be up for sale, more so than the Bulls. Like, the Bulls are so much more valuable than the White Sox are as a brand and as a franchise.
Oh, by far.
So if we're talking about, like our texter had mentioned, if you're talking about cash cow, I think the White Sox would be more favorably up for sale than the Bulls would ever be. So to me, it just, to sell one of the marquee franchises in all of professional sports has to take a lot. I don't think they're giving up anytime soon on this Bulls team. So, yes, I mean, as sad as it is to say, point to Michael's son in his teenage years and hope 10 years down the road, once he finishes college, that he joins up with this Bulls team and puts them in the right direction if they're already not in that path. So that would be my biggest thing. And I think Michael still does care about this team. I just think, like his dad, they're both loyal to a fault, and they want these guys to succeed, and they want their friends to succeed, and that's the way this Bulls team is run. So this one comes from across the pond. It says, interested to hear your take on possibly moving LaVine. I don't see him as a piece on a winning team. A league-low defensive rating, very high turnover rate, crappy assist-to-turnover ratio, terrible shot selection and weak court vision and low hoops IQ. Forget it. I'll pass on some Showtime dunks, contested threes, long twos, and not getting back in transition. As a guy we know would say, what say you? And this is from Renee. So, Matt, I will toss this up. I don't think we've had a question about potentially moving LaVine at all this year. So let's hear your thoughts.
Yeah, I wonder if he has been reading C. Red Fred's timeline recently. C. Red Fred really seems to be obsessed with this idea of trading Zach LaVine for Brandon Ingram. And I don't know why. Yeah, I don't. Well, you know, Fred's grasping at straws and losing all kinds of hope. I feel bad for the guy right now. How far the mighty have fallen with their Bulls optimism this season. Look, I see the points that Renee is pointing out. Of course, we all knew that LaVine was a net negative on the defensive end. Yes, his turnover rate this season has been really rough. We've seen some of these games where he's turning the ball over 6, 7, 8 times, especially in the absence of Dunn being asked to be not just his scoring mentality kind of player, but the facilitator for a team that really didn't have one. I think that's where you get some of that high turnover, you know, the high turnovers and the poor assist to turnover ratio from LaVine. The shot selection, I think, is getting better this season than it was last season, and it was really bad last season. I still think that LaVine can be a very dominant offensive player in this league. I don't know, you know, where that ceiling is. I still don't think that he could be the guy on a team. I think that LaVine is best suited to be a two or even maybe a three on a championship contending team. But right now, sadly, he is one of your more talented guys on what looks to be, all things considered, a pretty team-friendly contract. So I don't think that the Bulls would be looking to trade him. I think for the Bulls right now, they know that that contract that they got LaVine to sign this past summer is a great value to them.
And just for his scoring alone, that value is really good for an NBA contract. And this is the problem that I have with Bulls fans sometimes, is we get too quick to judge a guy and already think we know we have him all figured out. And then we just want to run with biases. And I'm not saying that's what Renee's doing here, but let's actually dive into the numbers and look at what Zach LaVine's done here in Chicago. Zach hasn't even played a full season in a Bulls uniform yet. He played 24 games last year and he's played 28 this year. Let's give the guy who's only 23 years old a little bit of time to start to develop. 56 games and you've got him already figured out. Half of those games coming when he was trying to come back from an ACL injury. The guy's only 23 years old. Let's give him some time to develop. I'm not saying he's going to be a top 10 player in this league or a top 20 player in this league. But like you said, Matt, if the goal for Zach LaVine on this team can be the number three guy on a potential championship run team, I think that's good. Nobody's asking Zach LaVine to be the number one guy. I don't think that's fair to do to him either. Like Renee had mentioned, his defensive flaws, I think there's going to be some improvement, but he's still going to be a relatively bad defender, probably throughout his career. So you need him to capitalize on that offense. And I see what he's saying about his three-point shot and his ability to pass the ball and have some vision and not turn the ball over a ton. Those are all things that he's got to improve on. But let's take a deep breath and realize Zach LaVine's only 23 years old. Let's realize that he's still coming off an ACL injury, hasn't played a full season with this Bulls team yet, and hasn't played with any of their young talent yet. This entire season
hasn't been
with Markin and hasn't been with Dunn, hasn't been with Portis. So let's take a deep breath.
I think that's just as important as what you were saying with like half of his games in a Bulls uniform. He's been coming off of, you know, an ACL, less than a year removed last season. And then this season, just as important, he still really hasn't played with Lowry and Dunn that much. Like, Lowry was back for a few games, and then Dunn came back for a couple games, and then Zach, you know, twists his ankle. So still, we haven't seen it. So his assist-to-turnover ratio that Renee's talking about, and his maybe, you know, the taking too many threes or long twos or whatever, the turnovers, that was Zach LaVine playing with a whole bunch of scrubs. And remember how back in the first week of this season when LaVine was pouring in 30 points a night and then opponents started saying, oh, wow, maybe we should put some focus on Zach LaVine because he can score 30 easy and nobody else on this team can do jack. So as soon as opponents started focusing on LaVine and putting all kinds of double teams and pressure on him, yeah, the turnover started to spike, but it's only because he was playing with nobodies. So I'm going to give him a little bit of a pass for that.
Here's another thing to think about, too. According to Basketball Reference, they like to do position estimates for each year, and I think they're almost down to a T. They're pretty accurate. Guess how much of the time Zach LaVine has spent at the 2, the 3, and the 4 this season? 8% of his time has been at his natural position, which is the 2. 88% of his time on the floor has been at the 3 this year, and 4% of the time has been at the power forward position. So think about that, too. Zach LaVine has had to make up by being essentially your 3 on defense and coming down the floor and basically being having to be your point guard for the offense for the first 25 games of this season. So let's give him some time to develop. He's playing out of position, and I don't want it to sound like I'm making excuses for Zach LaVine because he does have clear things to improve on, But let's take a breath for a second and let's give the guy some time to develop a little bit. That goes for any of the guys that we feel high on at this point. Markkanen, Carter, Dunn.
Paul Zipser, who we're high on.
And Levine. It goes for all of those guys. Give them a little bit of time to develop. Let's hit a short break here on Locked On Bulls, but we come back. I'm going to take the rest of your questions. Matt had to bounce out, but I will continue to take your questions. 331-979-1369. Stay with us here on Locked On Bulls. Be back in 60 seconds. Back here on Locked On Bulls, Matt had to step out, so I'm going to take the remaining calls that you guys have. But before I do that, I kind of wanted to mention what I was diving into last night. I was looking at all 109 Wendell Carter Jr. fouls this season because the eye test was telling me that he was getting a little bit of the rookie treatment, and by a little bit, I mean a lot. And Bulls fans had mentioned this multiple times over the past 30 games that Carter's played in. And I feel like this has played a factor, but I wanted to make sure that my eye test was also supported by actual evidence. So I went to Twitter, I cut up the videos that I could grab that were the most obvious ones, where Carter was picking up fouls for either things that he wasn't even involved in, having to bail his teammates out, getting calls because players are flopping, or just simply because he's a rookie. And there's multiple times, and I pulled the 20 clips where I felt like the 20 fouls that were the most obvious, it's like head scratching, like, how did he pick up that foul? How is that on Wendell Carter Jr.? So I did that, and you couple that with the fact that being the best defender on your team on a pretty poor defensive rated team overall, I mean, you're going to be finding yourself bailing your teammates out a ton. So I found another about 20 clips or so of where Wendell Carter Jr. has had to bail his teammates out, getting blown past, missing coverages, missing switches, turning the ball over and having to stop fast breaks. Found these multiple instances where guys are either standing around the basket watching Carter as he's trying to defend, trying to grab offensive rebounds, whatever have it, just bailing teammates out in general. So couple those two together, and that's nearly 50% of the fouls Wendell Carter Jr. has committed this season. He's second in total fouls in the NBA, just behind Jaren Jackson Jr. with 109, Jaren Jackson Jr. at 111. Carter has picked up the most first half fouls in the NBA this season with 57. Jaren Jackson Jr. comes in at 53. So I was curious about this. I was like, does my eye test back up the actual evidence? And clearly it does. I don't know what the solution is other than be patient with Carter and be patient with his defense, because literally he is the only guy out there on a nightly basis that's actually going to give you an opportunity to make a defensive stop. He's the best defender that this Bulls team has on a pretty bad defensive team. So giving Carter the benefit of the doubt and watching him try to grow and mold with the guys he got back in Markkanen and Portis and Chris Dunn, I think things are going to be able to help him out a little bit more. Just being able to build his confidence back up. Look at the last couple of games. He's picked up 5-6 fouls. He's played in under 25 minutes in some of those games. So I think the frustration level is starting to build in his game, and I don't want him to get to a point where he's going out there on a nightly basis and finding out that he's got to play conservatively in order to stay on the floor for consecutive minutes. I don't want him to take that approach, but at the same time, those are just a couple things I picked out. If you want to go look at the video, it's over on Twitter at Jordan C. Malley. So just figured I'd point that out, and the video evidence is clearly there between the fouls he was picking up and the quote-unquote rookie treatment or just ticky-tack stupid fouls, and also him bailing his teammates out. So go watch those Jordan C. Malley on Twitter or at Locked On Bulls. All right, let's take a few more questions before we get out of here. This one comes from the 219. It says, do you guys see a trade package for Parker going to the Hawks? Something with Bazemore and Lynn possibly? Not sure if the cap would match, but Lynn would be fun to see running our second unit. Also a great vet with tons of experience as a respected journeyman. Not to mention the same career path many of our young Bulls are following. Thanks for the text. Look, I don't think the Hawks are probably going to give up Jeremy Lynn. Between Jeremy Lynn and Vince Carter, they're trying to do similar to what the Bulls are doing, is bring in a couple of veterans who've been around for a long time and be able to grow their guys. Trae Young specifically, Torian Prince, Kevin Huerter, those types of guys, they want to try and build a mold, and that's the reason why they brought Vince Carter in this season, is to try to be that veteran leader. And I think Jeremy Lin, in the same respect, can be that type of guy. So there would be no incentive. They clearly are one of the worst teams in the league this year. Them on top of the Phoenix Suns, on top of the Bulls, on top of the Cavs. So to me, I don't see the Hawks trading for Parker or wanting it. And it just goes back to the same conversation I had. Why give up anything that you have on your team when you could potentially sign him if a buyout is looming? So that's where I sit on a Carter trade package. This text comes from the 870, says, Chris Dunn is my favorite Bull. He's also our closer. That boy is clutch. Can't deny that, at least against the Spurs the other night. Look, I want to see Chris Dunn put games like that together. And what's kind of weird, and I don't know if this is just simply a small sample size or what it is, but did anybody else notice that Lauri Markkanen and Chris Dunn played a little bit better when Zach LaVine wasn't on the floor? And look, that's not fair to Zach LaVine either, because these guys haven't played together for that long. But Chris Dunn and Lauri Markkanen, who played a lot of games last year together, seem to have a better chemistry going on. And those two guys together were the reason why they were able to come back from a 21-point deficit against the Spurs the other night. So I agree with you, man. I hope Chris Dunn can be that guy, but there are some clear problems still. Like, Can you be led by a point guard who can't shoot threes? Can Chris Dunn get better at shooting threes? I know we saw that sort of embarrassing shot he had in the first half where he tried to take a long three, sort of hesitated and missed the rim maybe by 3 or 6 feet. He is pretty much on point when he takes those shots from about 15, 20 feet out, right on the elbow. He loves that shot. Go back and look at the film. Every shot that he hits is usually from those elbow spots. So I'm not surprised that Dunn can do this. It's about stacking these types of games. Can Dunn do this consistently? Because we saw this last year almost to date. I had mentioned it. The Utah Jazz game where he came down late and was able to close out games and hit a similar shot to the one he did against the Spurs. So it's about stacking games. Can Chris Dunn do that? This text comes from the 630. Yo guys, Nick from the University of Minnesota. I'm seeing all these trade rumors about Jabari Parker, and I couldn't be happier. I think he is one of the worst signings ever and only a testament to how horrible this front office is, but I'm confused. Who would want him? But apparently there are teams out there that do. So we got a big question to you guys. If you were given complete control of the team right now, what would you do differently? Seems like you guys and me included bashing the front office, and rightfully so, but what do you guys think could be done differently for the betterment of the organization? Thanks, love this show. So this is, I mean, how long do you have? Like, there is clearly a lot of things that need to be changed here. If we're specifically just talking about this season, I think the things that I would do is find a way to play your young guys as much as possible. Keep them healthy, but play them together as much as possible. See what you have in this year. Another move would be moving Holiday. Like, move him. Somebody will give you a second round pick. I've been shouting it from the rooftops that I think Holiday is worth a pair of second round picks. But even if you can only get one second round pick for him, fine, just do that. To take on as many assets as you can. I would come to a buyout with Jabari Parker if there is no value out there. If that's something you're not willing to do, is take on long term money, which is another thing. It's like, do you want to take on long term money or do you not? Do you feel like you can still be a player in free agency? Or do you want to take a chance on a young guy with a bad contract? Those are the questions that loom. And put Chris Dunn in the damn starting lineup when Zach LaVine comes back. The front office has said it a million times. It's not about wins and losses. If it's not, get your young players in there and see what you have in those guys. One last thing, and it would be a small change. I wouldn't let Cameron Payne play another minute this season. Like, I don't understand why he continues to play. Let Shaq Harrison play. Let Ryan Arcidiacono play when Zach LaVine comes back. Give Chris Dunn a heavier minute load. Like, at this point, do those things. Stop letting Cameron Payne play. And I don't know if Jim Boylan's going to come to that fact sooner rather than later, but Fred Hoiberg basically came to that fact pretty damn quickly. So I don't know if that's the front office pushing Cameron Payne on the coaching staff or what it is, but I would stop playing him immediately. Final one here for today. We'll take some voicemails tomorrow and the rest of your text messages on top of the interview we're going to be doing with a former first-round pick in the NBA, so get excited for that. It's going to be coming out tomorrow, so we'll do those voicemails and those texts. All right, I want to take this final question from the 404. Locked On Bulls, loving you guys. For some weird reason, I'm following the Bulls closer than ever. I've been a hardcore fan for 28 years. Why can't I look away from this year? I'm a teacher in Atlanta. I'm trying to keep the Bulls fans I have as students optimistic. Any advice for me? So I think this is a good question for me. I think if you've been listening to the show long enough, I think I'm a little bit more of an optimist than Matt is, and that's fine. Matt likes to consider himself a realist, which is okay. I feel like I'm pretty realistic about where this team is going, but I like to have optimism in our players. So that's where I would shift my focus. Like the headache that the front office is, we get that. And they've screwed so many things up. But at the end of the day, you're continuing to be a Bulls fan. So that's where we sit right now, right? So my optimism to everybody that says, like, where do I go? How do I continue to root for this team? Like, is there any hope? Is there any light at the end of the tunnel? I tell everybody that we have to hope that talent pushes through all of this bullshit, right? Like, if Zach LaVine, Lauri Markkanen, Wendell Carter Jr., Chris Dunn can turn out to be legitimate talents, I think we've got something. I really do. I feel like we can be optimistic about those players that we have. The phrase of this roster is trash, the construction of this roster is trash, might be mostly true, but the guys you care about and the guys that are most important to the future of this team aren't trash. Dunn, Carter, LaVine, Markkanen. Those guys you need to focus on. Like, Portis is kind of on the fence for me because he's going into free agency. Don't know if the Bulls are going to try and re-sign him. Don't know if that's worth their money, worth their time. I'd like for him to come back, but we need him to be the player he was in preseason or at the end of last year when he was dropping 28, 30 a night. Like, those types of incentives would make me want to spend money on Bobby Porter. So there's some questions about him. So the four guys that you can focus on most is Dunn, Markkanen, LaVine, and Carter. Out of those four guys, you hope talent pushes through. And by the end of this season, you're hoping that the Bulls are somewhere in the top three. If you can grab one of those young Duke players to add to the core of the four that we have here, I think you're in a pretty good position. Now, whether you believe in Jim Boylan or not, that's up to you. I don't think necessarily his style is going to work or last, but we just got to hope the talent pushes through that. And that's where we ultimately fall, is where are you going to get your superstars? And I think for the Bulls to be successfully quicker, it has to come within. And that's where I point my light to the end of the tunnel. Those four guys, adding a first-round pick and having the flexibility for the future, as much as I hate that buzzword.
Flexibility.
Having the cap space to be able to make a move ultimately puts the Bulls at a pretty decent position outside of the laughingstock that is the front office and that is Jim Boylan over the last couple of weeks. And maybe that'll deter players from coming here in free agency. So then you've got to really hope that the talent that you're getting through the draft and the young players that maybe you acquire in a trade, those guys push through more so than anything else. So that's my light at the end of the tunnel. Don't give up on any of these guys yet. Like, don't be fooled by the front office. I think they gave a lot of Bulls fans false hope. We sat here and told you, I think it's going to be difficult for this team to win 35 games, even if they are fully healthy. And that was with Fred Hoiberg, who was an offensive coach. So let's give it a little bit of time. Rebuilds don't happen overnight. And that sounds like something coming from the Bulls front office, but it's true.
It's not all going to happen in one day.
It doesn't happen overnight. When they hit the reset button, we said this might not come together for 3, maybe 4 years. It's about championships for me. I don't know about you guys. I don't want to be the 8th seed anymore. I don't want to be the 7th or the 8th seed squeaking it at 38 to 42 wins a year and being knocked out of the first round. It's about getting back to the finals, which the Bulls haven't done since Jordan. So that's where I'm at. So I hope that can give your students a little bit of optimism. Focus on the young players. All right, well, that's going to about do it here on Locked On Bulls. Thanks for hanging out with us today. Tomorrow's episode, go through voicemails, text messages. Again, you can drop those at 331-979-1369. We also have a special guest for the first time ever on the show, former first-round pick in the NBA. He's been with a handful of different teams. He's going to come in and talk to us about what it's like to be in an NBA locker room, sort of that veteran leadership and all the mess that's been going on with the Bulls this season and how it relates and whether or not he feels like the national perspective about the NBA players is steering us in the right direction or the wrong direction, and so much more. So we got a lot, and we're super excited for that conversation. We're live on Dash Radio, dashradio.com, and the Dash Radio app. On the Nothing But Net channel, live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central Time. For Matt Peck, I'm Jordan Malley. Bulls Nation, have a wonderful day. We'll be back tomorrow with a fresh episode. For Jordan and Matt, we are out. Deuces.
Locked On Bulls, a show for the most passionate fan base in the NBA. Hosts Jordan Malley and Matt Peck dive into the best Bulls news and stories around the NBA. Locked On Bulls is live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, starting at 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central. For more content and to stay up to date, head over to LockedOnBulls.com.